Okay, let's see if I remember how to do this. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Finding Japan, episode 64. Oh, has it been that long? Oh, God, I don't even know how long it's been since I've done the last podcast here. I may even just take a look. Welcome, everybody. How are you doing? This is Christopher, and this is the last episode of Finding Japan. Can't say Japan's first podcast. Can't even say Japan's best podcast, but it's certainly one of the podcasts. Hi, everybody. How are you doing today, this evening, tonight, morning? Wherever you may be, whatever time it may be, welcome to the very last episode of Finding Japan. I hope that you stick around and we get to wrap up this podcast together. It's been 64 episodes. Well, not really. I'll talk about that in a little while. But really, 64 episodes total. That's 8 times 8. Makes for a great grid that I'll put together on the final page here. But anyway, it's been, wow, since June 28th, where I did my last podcast, episode 63, wrapping it up. I can't believe it has really been that long ago. And if I felt really motivated, I would calculate how many days that was. But alas, I haven't. Let's say it's been about 5.5 months since I've done a podcast. Have you missed me? Of course you have. I've missed you guys too. Okay, well, I don't even know where to begin here because we have a lot of ground to cover. What I'm going to do this episode is I'm going to wrap up some of the things that I've enjoyed with this episode, really try to put a cap on the whole experience of living and working and having fun in Japan, and hopefully you guys will stick around for the ride. I have a large outline to go through here. God, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to listen to some clips. We're going to reminisce a little bit about some of my favorite stories from Japan. We're going to do a lot of things. So without any further ado, let me just sort of kick it off as we kick off the very last episode of Finding Japan. So I guess the first thing I want to talk about is just what's been going on over these last 5.5 months since I did that last podcast. Well, last podcast I kind of talked about what was going to come up over the next few weeks. We landed back in the United States, or I did actually. My fiance at the time left before me, and I went back and caught up with her, and we got married. So I am now officially married to the lovely Linda, and she's even more lovely now. So that was a lot of fun, a great experience, and obviously makes it difficult to podcast when you're going through something like that. A lot of planning, a lot of running around, but it was totally worth it. So highly recommend the getting married thing, and things have been really good as well. After the fact. But alas, no, that's not the reason why I haven't been podcasting. I have finished up my second to last semester here in South Carolina at my MBA program. And it has taken up quite a bit of time. I've had more classes this semester, and they've been more difficult than I had any of the previous semesters. And unlike being in Japan, where looking back on it now, I had a lot of free time, I haven't had much free time lately. So now is this week is the first week where I've had a large amount of free time. So now I'm finally able to start getting through all of this material that I have. I've spent probably the last week and a half just prepping for this episode. I'm raring to go. And I hope that the last 5.5 months have not been too overbearing. I'm not quite sure if there's still a lot of people listening. I haven't checked the stats or anything, but really, as I'll explain a little later, this podcast will complete in a different form and will be archived for later viewing later listening, whichever you prefer. And I hope it'll serve to sort of stand alone on its own as a complete body of work. So that's the plan. That's what I've been up to. Let's just get right in to this final episode. So I thought a lot about how I wanted to go ahead and do this, and I started first by going through every episode. And you know, there's so many experiences, there's so many things that happened in Japan that I could just talk forever about every single episode. And going through the episodes and the show notes, I thought what I would do is sort of break it up into categories here and kind of come through maybe the top three or four things I really enjoyed about Japan and then use the episodes to back it up. So that's what we're going to do here. One thing that, should I do an introduction? I'm going to do all the post-production later, so I don't even know how this is going to turn out. I may cut some of this out, if you know what I mean. I'm feeling spunky today. Anyway, what I will do first is we'll go over, let's see, one of the things I enjoyed most about Japan, which is conversations with strangers. I have three clips here, maybe even four clips, I think, when it all comes down to it. But one of the things that I love to do in Japan was just to have random conversations with strangers. Now, as you know, I was learning Japanese while in Japan. Great place to do it, by the way. And I often ran into people that were curious about foreigners or were curious about speaking English or someone learning Japanese. And one of the first encounters that I actually had caught on tape was in episode 7. And in episode 7, I went to a quiet park north of my neighborhood, and I was able to find a bench to just sort of sit down on and relax. And I came across a gentleman who was enjoying the flowers with me, so to speak. And this was my first conversation with a complete stranger, I think. Probably not, but the first one that was captured on tape. And a lot of people had commented in the blog afterwards about how they were impressed with my Japanese ability, but in reality, I think I said a lot of things that were wrong. So why don't we sort of transport ourselves all the way back to April 6th of 2007. That's when the episode was released, but for this purpose, let's just say that it's that day. Makes me feel better. Okay, let's go back to April 6th, 2007 and take a listen to one of my first conversations with a random person on the street in Japan.
Konnichiwa. Sakura wa kirei de shou. Ha? Ie, daigakusei desu. Anata wa? すごい。はい、早稲田で。うん。早稲田で日本語を勉強します。アルバイトの仕事はもうアルバイトしてる。はい。じゃあ、桜は見てください。よろしく。
Looking back on that encounter, I realized how terrible my Japanese was, actually. But one of the things that I thought was really nice is, you know, they say Japanese people are usually reserved and quiet and not really fearful, but hesitant to approach people who may not speak the language. But I certainly found that to be not always the case. And this was one of the first times that I had the opportunity to prove myself wrong. Well, I thought the same way before, but I proved myself wrong by talking to this guy. So one of the things that you'll find in the Finding Japan catalog of all 64 episodes, you'll find me talking to random people sometimes. And this was probably the best example. Another really good example comes from episode 24, where I had to do a interview project for my class. And this was just so much fun. I remember going across the Waseda campus trying to stop students who are otherwise busy you know how college students are. They don't really, most of them are nice, but of course, you know, you come up to them and try to ask them questions and, you know, obviously you're a foreigner and you're struggling with language. And they kind of look at you and go, man, what's this guy doing wasting my time? Well, we certainly got a bit of that. And that came across when we tried to interview three girls. And take a quick listen as Alex being one of my classmates in the Japanese 1 class we were at. He's from France, and English is his second language, so I guess Japanese was maybe his third, or maybe English is his third, I'm not sure. And if he's listening, hey Alex, how you doing? I haven't talked to you in a while, but I hope things are well. Alex is still in Japan studying and working at the university there, so hello Alex. But let's take Alex and the rest of you back to episode 24, and I'm going to play two clips here, one from an interview that we did with two girls. So here we go.
Maybe you should first tell her that we are Japanese students and we want to make an interview. Because if you ask, do you have time? Maybe they mean, you know, that our hearts are not so pure.
Yeah.
See?
That could be it.
Because they look a little bit scared.
Yeah, kinda. Maybe it would just be better to talk to guys.
Actually, they had time.
Okay.
I mean, it's obvious.
That was really funny. Alex had a good point. The way we were asking them is kind of like, hey, do you have the time? Not quite sure if what we were doing sounded like a pickup line, but anyway, we got denied. Literally nied by these young girls here, and that was pretty funny. I totally forgot about that till I started doing the research for this episode, and I thought that was a lot of fun. But we did have some success. So here's a clip from our third interview. We were asking someone about music groups and where they listen to music. I think Japanese music was our theme for our interview project. So here comes the third and slightly more successful interview.
I think we're finished because we've interviewed four people now.
Four people? You think we're finished? No, I mean, we can interview some more.
You want to?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
Sumimasen ga.
Sumimasen ga.
Nihongo no gakusei desu. Chotto...
そうかな。ありますか?あ、5分だけ大丈夫です。いいですか?はい、いいですよ。オッケー。あ、少し、日本語はステイマス。あ、テーマは日本語音楽です。日本語音楽?はい。テープでいいですか?うん。後で、後で聞きます。練習します。はい、ありがとうございます。日本語の音楽は聞きますか?
はい、じゃあどんな音楽?J-POP?スマップ。スマップ。宇多田ヒカル。あ、宇多田ヒカル聞きます。本当?一番好きなバンドが?好きなバンド。ミスターチルドレン。ミスターチルドレン。私はトライセラトプス。
ああ、すごいな。懐かしい。チャイサロトップスとギターウォーフ。ギターウォーフ。古いのは多分。古い。古すぎてわからない。どこで、よくどこで音楽を聴きますか?
どこで、iPod とかで、いつも。
So, nan demo ii desu.
So, itoko demo.
Densha.
So, densha.
Uchi de.
Suugaku shite ru tochuu. Gakkou ni iku tochuu.
De, michi.
Kiki nagara nani o shite imasu ka? うちで掃除をします
。
あ、今仕事がありますか。
仕事？
はい。
バイト。アルバイトしてます。
バイトで来てもいいですか。
いや。
バイトで。
バイトはダメです。
ダメです。
多分以上ですけど、
はい、
ありがとうございました。
ありがとう、
頑張ります。
It's amazing what actually learning Japanese in a classroom will help you do. That was much more successful, and if you don't know Japanese, maybe just sort of enjoy the sounds of the campus there. And we'll talk about sounds a little later, actually. I got a whole set of clips for you guys about sounds. But yeah, it was a lot of fun being able to interact with Japanese people. And I did have some experience with the friends that I made in Kamata. And obviously, I had some really good friends who I'll talk about a little later, who still live in Japan. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to go around the campus and just interview people and hang out. And it's a beautiful campus, Waseda. And if you ever have the opportunity to go visit Tokyo, just head a little north of Shinjuku, and that'll take you right up to Takara no Baba. And from there, you can walk to the Waseda campus. If you shoot out of the Takara no Baba station, you should be able to see a map there, and you can just kind of walk down there. There's a ton of great restaurants down there, very beautiful walks, some gardens, and of course, you have the campus there. You can just walk right through. So take that as a little recommendation if you're heading into Tokyo. All right, now I want to talk about less conversations with strangers and conversations with people that I actually know. As you know, if you're listening to this podcast or have listened in the past, you will know that I am a huge fan of Japan's first podcast, Tokyo Calling. You can find it at tokyocalling.org. That lovely podcast is run by a gentleman and a person I consider a friend, Mr. Scott Lockman. He's been at this for quite a while. I feel like he's finally settling into his game there with podcasts. But one of the things I appreciate about Scott so much is he's constantly experimenting and constantly challenging his own ways of thinking. And he loves bouncing ideas off of other people and, of course, off of his listeners as well, as you know, if you listen to the podcast. Well, in episode 13, Scott and I did a dual interview where we both brought some recording gear. We met up at a coffee shop in front of a hotel lobby somewhere near... Scott, you're going to have to help me out here. Somewhere near Korakuen, I think, because I remember the big... There's a structure in Korakuen. It's very, very famous, and I think we were around there. And Scott and I just sort of met up and shot the breeze, I guess you could say. I almost said shat the breeze. oh, dear. Anyway, we had some fun there, and the great thing that I love about this clip and the episode actually is a funny episode because I too was experimenting with the podcasting format and trying different things, and this whole episode came off like an NPR bit. It was really funny, and I was really getting into like doing the little talking in between the clips and editing it all up nice, and I had a lot of fun doing the episode, so if you have some time, go back and listen to episode 13. It's a great listen. But I'm just going to play a little portion here with Scott, and I don't know how much I'll stick in there eventually, but take a listen to this and listen to... I don't know if the clip actually has the parts where I'm talking in between the clips, but it's a blast if you listen to it. And What else was funny? Oh, yeah. At the beginning of this, you'll hear in the background some background music, and there's like an instrumental version of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, which really added to the whole ambiance of this clip here. So I really enjoy this, and take a listen.
Next, I asked Scott a little bit about why people listen to Tokyo Calling. In his comments, he was pretty modest, but I really think that Tokyo Calling has something different to offer. We tried to dig into that topic just a little bit, and I think we've only touched the top. I think the larger question really is, though, why do people listen to podcasts that don't have a particular theme in general, or that seem to focus on a particular person?
I think one thing, as I've said it before, is just the timing that I got in. I was in at the beginning and wound up on that first directory that Adam Curry put together. And then when iTunes went online with podcasting, it was there. I hit Tokyo Calling, interchangeable. But it was on the first level of directory there. And then it was also featured on the front page a few times. And also, I think, if I do say so myself, I think it's a good name. There's a very good brand potential. I don't think that potential has ever been fulfilled as it could be, but just the name Tokyo Calling, I think if you had any interest in Japan or punk rock or The Clash or whatever, or even old telephony, you know, international long distance calls, what is it? I'll check it out. You know, Tokyo Calling. Who's not interested in Tokyo in some way? You know, it's like an enigma to
sort of like the umbrella over the city in podcasting world.
Yeah, well, not Tokyo Calling itself, but just the topic of Tokyo, I think, is interesting to many people. Just because, I don't know why, but
I think if someone just looked at the brand itself and said, "What do I think that is?" It could be anything, and it could encompass all of Tokyo.
Yeah, you mean the name?
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo Calling, yeah. But then they come, and I don't know how many people come and never come back, or just listen for 5 minutes and internalize. The recurring theme in the comments that come back is that people are eager to hear one person telling his or her story, because it's so rare in comparison to commercial media and what's out there. And then, as you mentioned, probably the majority of the podcasts are in that second camp where they're trying to fit into a pre-existing genre or make it like a show with segments and features, which is what I tried to do as well, because we think we would like to emulate what we've heard. So maybe that's a, I think Rich Pav, as you say, has sort of done that even more so, which is kind of put it out there. You mentioned that you think that he is thinking about what is interesting for listeners. Maybe so, but I even get more of the sense that he's just doing whatever he wants and he doesn't really care at some point. I don't mean that in a bad way, but he's just sort of, well, this is me and this is what I want to say.
The reason why I said that is because he does do some level of editing and selection. Because he'll record a podcast or something and say, "I didn't like it, so I put it in the chum bucket." It's just
the chum bucket.
The chum bucket. But some of the podcasts he'll go through and he'll edit and he'll put in like a song. So there is some discretion there. But at the same time, you're right. I appreciate, I think I caught a video of him playing frisbee with one of his kids. Just 30 seconds of frisbee via the mouth cam. But yeah, I think...
Trademark mouth.
Yeah, trademark. I think it's an interesting... it's an interesting time to be self-publishing. I'm interested to see what people do with it.
I just realized that clip didn't have the raindrops keep falling on my head. I think it was earlier in the episode, actually. But anyway, go have a listen. That's another classic. Classic Finding Japan. Yeah. Oh, man. I hope you guys don't mind. I'm just having fun with this episode. Putting this all together, I mean, this has just been such a blast. I was actually talking to my friend Saya last night over Instant Messenger and telling her how much I miss Japan and the people there. And trust me, putting this episode together does not make me happy about being back in the States at all. There's a lot of things I missed about Japan. One of the things that I miss the most, actually, is the sounds of Japan. you know, going around and podcasting, whether it be on my phone or with the Adderall, which is what I'm using now, it was just a lot of fun to capture some of the sounds. It's podcasting, so you're listening to something. You know, obviously I would take pictures as well and try to post those with the episodes, but the sounds always amazed me. And what amazed me even more were the sounds that I didn't expect. I would be doing an episode and all of a sudden something would happen. I said, wow, that's a great sound, and I would have to pause. One of the sounds that I remember so clearly is the sound of the Yaki-Imo truck, the roasted potato truck that used to drive through my neighborhood when we lived over there in Sumiraku. So from episode 11 here is one of the most famous sounds of Japan from the Finding Japan series, and this is the sound of the roasted potato truck. And the Yaki-Imo truck was only one of many illustrious vehicles that would crawl through the small streets of our neighborhood. We used to have the truck that would come through asking for old electronics, like air conditioners and, I don't know what else, televisions, etc. I think the Yaki-Imo truck drove through maybe four or five times before I finally went down there to buy a roasted potato, and I think it was 300 yen, which is about, at the time, it was about maybe 275 US dollars. And it wasn't that good, actually, looking back on it. It was a little dry, but no, it was a lot of fun. So that was a blast, the Yaki-Imo truck. And throughout the year, Alex and I, my roommate, not my classmate Alex, my roommate Alex, we would try to perfect the Yaki-Imo song, and we got pretty good at it. I don't know if I ever recorded it, but we got pretty good at it, and that's always a source of fun out at a bar here in the United States, and just bust out with the Yaki-Imo song. So that's been quite a bit of fun there. We got a lot of mileage out of the Yaki-Imo truck. Next is a clip from episode 40, where I was taking a walk through Asakusa. I believe this day I was just kind of cruising around and checking out a bunch of different storefronts, etc. I'm actually going to pull up the episode page here. But one of the things that was really great about this episode is I ran across a sound I didn't expect, and this is what I dubbed the zombie cleaning crew. Also in this episode was an audio clip from sumo wrestling, if you want to check that out. There was an Only in Japan and some stories about homelessness. But clearly, the highlight of this episode was the zombie cleaning crew clip. And I'm going to play that for you right here. I think this one was actually recorded on my cell phone, so it doesn't come across very well, but I'm sure you'll enjoy. So enjoy the zombie cleaning crew clip.
Thank you.
to this day, I'm still not exactly sure what they were trying to do. In that episode, I sort of described what I was seeing, so I'll leave it to the episode itself if you want to go check that out. But that was another great sound of Japan. And it's funny because I can remember exactly what corner it was on, and God, those sounds really bring you back. It reminds me, I was just listening to Scott Lockman's latest episode of Tokyo Calling, or not his latest, I think it was 128 or 127, and he was at the corner of Ginza, major corner there where there's a department store and what he called the Jumbotron, and I remember it as the high vision hour or something like that. They have this huge high definition, it's not a television, it's a set of small LEDs, and he was sort of sharing with his audience, as well as myself, the sound and sights, and it just brought me right back to that exact intersection. And because while I was in Japan, I didn't have a car. I had a bike for a short period of time. But because you don't have a car, you really tend to recognize intersections much more because you're usually walking. And hearing things like this zombie mob clip, I can remember the exact intersection in front of the garden in Asakusa. There's actually some sort of museum for actors, or it's like an actor's museum or a Japanese theater museum, something like that, but it was right there in front of that intersection, so I don't know. If you've never been to Japan or Asakusa, you're like, okay, whatever. But if you have been, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's what these types of sounds do. They bring you right back. Another one, too, was... let's see. We have a clip from episode 48 where I toured various coffee houses. Didn't really go door-to-door, but basically we did a sound tour of some of the... different coffee environments, as you know, with the coffee episodes, which we'll talk about in a little bit as well. But in that particular episode, episode 48, we did a tour of some of the coffee houses there. And if I can remember exactly which ones here. Yeah, let's see. We did a sound tour of Starbucks in Asakusa, a coffee shop at Waseda University, Excelsior in Ikebukuro, and Dotoru in Ueno Station. And that was a great one because that's right under the Shinkansen. So you're able to hear the trains go by overhead, and it would shake the table, and you could hear the coffee dishes, the cup and the saucer rattle. That was a lot of fun. So if you're into sort of the coffee sounds, check that out. That's episode 48. Another great episode was episode 53, where I went with some classmates to go try and find Guitar Hero in Asakusa, and we walked through some of the arcades in Ikebukuro. That was a lot of fun, and at that time I had the handheld recorder, sorry, the thing I'm talking into right now as I stare at it, and that was sort of a cacophony of sounds, a really great sound seeing experience where we go up and down through various different levels of arcades looking for Guitar Hero. And eventually we found it, and because we were trying to describe to one of our classmates, Im-san, who had never seen this game, and we were trying to describe it to her. So we're like, oh, let's go find it. And that was a blast. Episode 53 called Finding Guitar Hero. What else was in that episode? I'm trying to remember. A couple stories about working full-time. So, I don't know. Go check it out if you like that. Another one that's a lot of fun was the QB Cutcast, where I did two episodes. It was episode 39, where I talked about getting my hair cut at QB House. And it was episode... I think there's two episodes of QB House. Ah, oh, man, I miss the 1,000 yen haircuts. I wonder if they're still 1,000 yen. Can someone in Japan let me know? Are the haircuts at QB House still 1,000 yen? I hope so. But anyway, no, in episode 51, I got a haircut at QB House and podcasted the whole thing, and then actually posted episode 51 redo as the entire 30-minute end-to-end unedited version of the getting your haircut at QB House Experience. So check that out if you're interested. And then last but not least, we did a all sound podcast, episode 61, the mother of all sounds of Japan podcast, if I do say so myself, where we did 16 clips of sounds from Japan that covered, quite a long time period from, goes all the way back to May of 2007 and all the way to April of 2008. Lots of different sounds, including what it's like to ride the Yurakucho line. I covered, crows at my university, some classroom audio where we were talking about, Korean schoolgirls in our oral expression class. Another one where our class was singing some lame SMAP song, doing like an impromptu karaoke. We were watching the disaster preparedness video at the Tokyo Bosaikan, which is their disaster preparedness center. Some video about smoke inhalation. Some awesome French elevator music in a coffee shop. Some audio from Kobe, hanging out in the planetarium. Got some great audio from the Tokyo Giants game, a sumo match. The Kanemaru Matsuri, also known as the Kawasaki Penis Festival. Great stuff in there. Go check that out, too. The Kawasaki Penis Festival is a sight to behold. Some sounds in Itabashi as walking through some of the stores around there, and some drumming in a small park in Shinjuku that Linda and I ran into just before we climbed Mount Fuji. So check that out. But two of my favorite clips that I'm going to play for you now from that episode are the guy in the 7-Eleven at the building that I worked at in Ariake. And this guy had, I believe, the best irashaimase of any storekeeper that I've heard in a podcast. Kind of hard to hear him in this one. You can kind of hear him in the background. But what really makes this clip, I think, one of the best clips that I've ever recorded was a combination of the sounds that the shopkeepers are making as well as the music that's being played. So let's listen into this clip really quick. One of the things that I love about that clip is the how's it go? It goes Oh man, I used to have that stuck in my head all the time. Every 7-Eleven plays that over and over and over again. But yeah, the music that they play in the convenience stores is just awesome. It's really cool. Another one I'm going to play for you right now is actually a clip from Lawson's trip from episode 44. It's actually not in episode 61. I just realized I went out of order here from my outline here. But this is another great clip from a convenience store with some follow-up of what happened after the fact. So let's check out the second convenience store sound tour, whatever you want to call it, clip. Here we go.
Try and get something to eat for dinner. All right, why don't you come along? I'll tuck you in my pocket. And you can come. Okay, here we go.
Thank you. That was brilliant. Two funny things happened while I was in the store. One, I thought I would try to give a commentary about my choices. And as soon as I started, because I was looking at the vitamin water, I'm like, I think I'll have some vitamin water. And I realized there was a woman standing right next to me. And I think that she thought I was talking to her. And she kind of like walked away and looked over her shoulder. So I think I scared her. I think that would scare me too if someone just sort of walked in and started saying stuff. But, three funny things. I don't know if it caught it on the recording, but as soon as I walked in, there was like this 70s, like, I don't know. It's kind of weird, funky music. Got me in a funky mood. But the problem is that the speaker was right under where all the feminine products were. So I was going to stand under the speaker so you guys could get a little audio clip of that, but as soon as I got over there, I realized where I was, and I had to walk away. And then the third thing was, right when I left, there's this song on, and it's like, Lost Sins, like as soon as I'm leaving, so I was reminded yet again of the convenience store that's satisfying my needs, so that was kind of interesting.
Wow.
Lost Sins! I remember that. Oh, okay. Let's kind of go back to episode 61 here. And this is another really great clip. This is a clip from Kobe with my friend Terrence from the Kobe Beef podcast, Kobe Beef Show. Go check it out. Google that. Kobe Beef. Also, shout out to Terrence and his new business there, Kobe Beef Kick. They're selling some awesome t-shirts. So definitely go check it out, especially if you're into meat. You need some meat on your chest, go to Kobe Beef Cake. Okay, there's my plug. All right, anyway, going back to this episode 61, right around the time of Terrence's birthday and my roommate Alex's birthday, that must have been, what, December of last year, Alex and I headed out to Kobe to hang out, and we ended up at this funk club in Kobe after a night of just, oh man, I love that town, Kobe. There's so many good things. We went back to the bar that I went to when I was out there in 2005 to go drink some Aomori. And, man, oh, what a great time. And there's that whiskey bar that's run by women, or that only employs women. That's also great. And they take the ice and they do it upright with the off the ice block and everything. Oh, man, I just want to just transport myself back to Kobe right now. But anyway, here's a clip from a funk club where it's just a really cool clip because there's this awesome funk music in the back, and we're just hanging out, chilling, and we're talking about, of all topics, cats. So check it out.
That's the way you do it, I think.
Yeah, I didn't want to buy a fucking cat.
It's not worth it when there's cats in your home, you know? Is it a he or a she?
Oh, it's a she. Yeah.
You get it as a he?
Oh, it's a he now.
No, but did you get her as a kid?
Yeah. That's okay.
And me.
Yeah.
How do I do this? Wow, cool pattern. Wow. The pattern's sweet. I'm happy. That's kind of sweet. It's pretty sweet pattern.
That's cool.
Man, that clip is like another world, huh? You know, you got the ding 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 going on in the background, and we're talking about, hey, did you get her as a kitten? That was a great night, though. That was a lot of fun. So there you go. That's some of the sounds that I just love from Japan that brings me back. There's a lot more in those episodes, too, so definitely check it out. And if you're a new listener and you're into sounds, go start with episode 61. That'll get you primed. For all the other podcasts. One of the other things that I just love about Japan, and that I really got to experience with this podcast, was the food. Well, I should say, in all fairness, food and drink. There's a lot of different things that I had the opportunity to try. And one of my favorite bits is from episode 6, where Alex and I are recounting our chicken experience. This is such a great episode because this is one of the first episodes that I got Alex to participate in. And throughout the rest of these clips, you'll see here, you'll get to experience this with Alex as well, who was always willing to go ahead and chip in some content, and always made, in my opinion, I think, the podcast's much more interesting. It's so much better to have someone to talk to than sitting there talking to yourself all the time. So anyway, check this out. This is one of our first experiences with not really knowing what you're eating in Japan. And again, this is from episode 6.
Let's move on to the raw chicken.
Raw chicken.
Chicken sashimi experience. I don't know. I think it was like Wednesday, Thursday last week.
Yeah.
It had to be Thursday because we had just moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking for something to eat. And I swear to God, I don't know much kanji in Japanese. So sometimes eating at more traditional places
is a bit difficult, can get a little tough.
And we were in Kurumai, right across the river.
Yeah, it's around here.
And we ate at a place called Hiden.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, it's called Hiden. Hiden.
Yeah.
But I remember that because I'm like, it's hidden. And it was a, I don't even know how to describe it. It seemed like a torimiku place.
Yakitori.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yakitori.
Well, that's what they had on the outside. We saw, like, the pictures. They had posters.
Yeah.
They're all, like, yakitori, so I assume that's what it was.
But they had so much more. It wasn't just yakitori. A lot of places in Japan will just have one thing or one kind of thing, mm-hmm. like yakiniku or yakitori or gyoza or dumplings. This place was, I don't know, just weird. So we got the menu, and I don't think you could have read much of it either.
Well, see, I recognized the Hinai Jidori because back when I lived in Akita, Japan has three types of really famous domestic chickens. There's three, like, species of chicken that are native to Japan. They're really famous because they're supposed to be delicious. And one of them is the Hinai chicken.
The Hinai chicken.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that town was like 5 minutes from where I lived in Akita. So that's why I recognized the kanji.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, oh, okay, you know, Hinajidori, you know, is famous. We gotta hit this up, you know. Yeah, that's why I ordered it.
And then I couldn't read much on the menu, so I ordered one of the few things I could read, which was the hata hata.
That's right.
So we sat down, and the person who was cooking, there was like a small glass enclosure, and they were cooking the yakitori, traditionally. It was taking quite a while for it to come, so we got this small bowl of stuff, and it looked like I don't know, kind of looked like a salmon or like a cod or...
Yeah,
yeah. It was bizarre. I had a couple bites of it. I'm like, wow, this is really good. I wonder what this is.
I know, you're like, I don't know what kind of fish this is, but...
It's not bad. Yeah. It's a little... It had like a little vinegar sauce on it and like some... A bit of roe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some greens and like there's cucumbers and radish and stuff in there. And I'm like, this is not bad. And I had thought that it was because we were waiting so long for our food.
Right, right, yeah.
So then the hata hata comes out. And I didn't realize that the hata hata is just an entire fish, maybe about 6 inches long, head to tail, a little salted, but just grilled, straight up grilled. And I'd been watching that fish grill right in front of me for about 10 minutes. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm glad I didn't order that. So immediately when that came, I kind of looked at you and I'm like, dude, I think that's the hinaitori.
Yeah.
And you're like, nah, dude, this isn't cooked.
I was pretty sure it was the yakitori. That's what I was like hoping for. Yeah. No, actually, when I saw it, I kind of had that really bad premonition.
You did?
Yeah. Because it wasn't fish, man. I could tell.
Now, we had taken a while. We looked at the kanji, and it was like a different kanji for raw after we looked at it, right? And I can't visualize it, but if I ever see it again, I'll know it.
Well, it's funny because there's a different character for raw. It's like nama, for like raw egg. It would be like nama tamago.
So it's almost like the kanji for life.
It is, yeah, right? It is the same one.
With like three horizontal bars, one long middle bar, and then like on the left side, the top one, there's a small...
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's also the kanji in birth certificate, I found out today because I went up to City Hall.
Yeah.
It's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So starting to recognize some more. It's good.
Yeah.
That's usually the kanji for raw.
That's the one I usually recognize.
But this had something different, so...
Yeah. I keep thinking it was a character for sashimi, but I keep meaning to look that up, but I didn't.
Oh, we'll have to, yeah.
Another twice contributor to the podcast is my good friend Fred, who at the time was back in the States and in Europe and all sorts of funky places, and managed to meet up with Fred through the miracle of technology to do two coffee episodes. These episodes were dedicated entirely to the topic of Japanese coffee, which among some people is a very serious topic. I mean, Japan knows its coffee, and there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Japan and coffee. This next clip is a clip from one of those episodes, episode 21, where we talk a little bit about coffee in Japan. And another thing to check out in that episode, too, is a review from Scott Lockman of Tokyo Calling about a coffee place that he went to called, let's see here, I think called Alle France. So definitely check that out to get the full effect. Like I said, episode 48 is a continuation of episode 21, where we talk about coffee in more detail. And we do some sound tours of various coffee places that I had mentioned before. But anyway, let's take a brief clip from episode 21, where Fred helps me discuss the finer points of Japanese coffee.
But yeah, so overall, let's rate Starbucks on a scale of 1 to 5. I give it about I got to give it a 3, because it's nothing to write home about. It's Starbucks. It's consistent. It's okay. It's Starbucks.
Here's the one thing, though. I want to talk about something unique in Starbucks in Japan.
Okay.
So instead of little sugar packets like you get everywhere else in the world, they have the little coffee creamers that come in these little plastic things with the paper top kind of thing, with a little foil paper top?
Yes.
Instead of actually putting a little sugar in, you put these little sugar gooey things. And they have the regular sugar too, but naturally, when in Japan, do like the Romans or whatever. And so you put this stuff in your coffee, and it's actually so much better than like regular coffee and sugar in the United States.
Hmm. Do you usually put sugar in your coffee? Is that like, are you basing this from a sugar in coffee mode in the U.S.?
I am actually, I have a high degree of changing upness with my coffee. So many times I put sugar in, many times I don't put any sugar in. You know, I like to mix it up. Depends on my mood. Depends on, you know, I don't know, whatever.
See, that's a difficult thing for me to comment on. So at least 3 or 4 different types of coffee. Now, there's one coffee type or one coffee manufacturer that's pretty prominent in Japan, and that's called Boss Coffee. And I think what I find amazing about Boss Coffee is on their logo, it says, the boss since 1992.
Well, he may be a relatively new boss, but he is definitely the boss.
He's the boss since 92, man. I started high school in 92. No, 91.
Yeah. So you're a sophomore.
Now, I actually have a picture of vending machines that I'll put with the post here. So if the listener is listening now and you guys are interested, take a look at the show notes while you're listening and you will see a picture of the actual vending machines. And I'm gonna show Fred the same thing right now. We're gonna go through and we're gonna talk about maybe some of the ones that we've had here.
Really, I think that we can pretty safely say we've had probably all of them.
I think so.
I remember the 100% black or whatever it is, coffee.
Okay, so in this particular photo right now, we see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different types of actual coffees. This particular machine didn't have any Boss Coffee in it, I don't believe.
Yeah, at least we don't see any.
No.
I think it's important to discuss the red versus blue labels. So the blue labels are all cold coffee, like iced coffee, and all the red labels are all hot coffee. So the actual cans themselves are hot and cold because the machine actually has like a hot compartment and a cold compartment to give you your hot or iced coffee as you please.
If you actually read the labels too, the top ones say, for those who are studying Japanese, they say tsumetai, which is the adjective used for any sort of cold drink, not cold weather, but a cold drink. And then the red labels are attakai. It actually means warm, it doesn't mean hot. But one of the things that's really interesting about these types of machines is that though they do have, how to describe this, though they do have hot drinks, more often than not, the can is burning hot and the liquid inside is just sort of semi-warm.
I was just gonna mention that. So the can is actually, it feels like it's thick enough to be a steel can, and it's hot. It really is hot. It's very hard to hold in your hand. They need like a little Starbucks sleeve.
There's a new type of coffee that I've been really digging. It's called Big Black.
Big Black. That kind of reminds me of Bear Beer, but that's a different podcast.
Ah, man, I want some Dole Toro coffee right now. So bad. Okay, let's move on. Episode 23 is another classic. And the only reason why I put this in here is because Scott had mentioned this a while ago about how this is one of his favorite episodes, specifically because of a quote that I made. I'm speaking, of course, of the Miracle Fruit episode. In this episode, Alex and I went to Namja Town in the, I think it's the Ikebukuro Sunshine Building area. There's a, I guess you could call it an indoor food amusement park. I think that's the best description for this place. You have to listen to the episode to get the full effect of Namja Town. Now I got the song stuck in my head. Namja, Namja. Ah, great episode. But anyway, in this episode, Alex and I go to the Miracle Fruit Cafe. And the Miracle Fruit is a, it's kind of like a seed that you chew and it turns sour things into sweet things. You can get some more detail on that episode, but definitely check it out. And we're going to go to a clip here about that episode. And one of the things I love about this episode is the music in the background. So pay attention to that. Here we go. Episode 23, the Miracle Fruit episode, one of my favorite clips.
So I guess one of the interesting things about the Miracle Fruit is that all these desserts, I guess, taste super sweet, but they really stress like how many calories there are in it. And there's very few, comparatively speaking. Yeah, kilocalories.
Yeah, I think the same because you're eating the Miracle Fruit.
It normally wouldn't be sweet. It's probably like not much sugar in it.
Right, right. Yeah. So I guess like after taking the miracle fruit, it tastes just as good, but you don't have all the calories from the sugar. I hope we don't die.
Yeah, we have no idea what we're doing. We order, order something else.
Dude, there's a hypodermic needle on this platter. Alright, so we're going to take the miracle fruit now. I guess we're supposed to just chew it. Tastes a little sweet. Now it's starting to get really bitter. Oh man, this is pretty terrible actually.
I was supposed to eat it.
I think you can, I don't think it's hurting. Mine turned into pulp.
At first I felt kind of like a heat.
Really?
Comfortable. A little bit. Like my tongue goes like hot sensation.
It looks like a tic tac. If you bite it in the dark, it'll spark. It's pretty sour. Almost like tingly bitter. Mmm, now it's getting really weird. Wow. I start biting through the skin. Oh, this is weird.
It's not too bad. Oh, actually, no.
It's getting progressively worse, actually.
Mine's pretty much disintegrated.
Me too. I think I'm just going to swallow this.
I don't know how I can get rid of it.
Well, it's been 2 minutes. So what do we start with here? I think I'm just going to go straight in.
I'm going to go for the kiwi first.
I'm going straight in for the lemon. Here we go. Here we go. Tastes like an orange.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
I'll try my lemon. It does taste sweet. It does taste orange.
I'm going to go right for the gourmet, for the plum. It's still really sour.
I just paused the recorder here to eat some. What are these, pecans? I think so. No, almonds. Jeez. I don't know my nuts. I'm hopeless. But let's get back to the podcast here. Yeah, and then episode 41, the drink review. This is a great clip because Alex and I try to do some math to figure out what the watered-down Nika actually is. In Japan, I mean, I talk about this in the podcast, but to give some context, in Japanese convenience stores, usually the test bed for new products, and new products, especially drinks, don't last very long. We had like Pepsi Cucumber for, I don't know how long, maybe like a week. And then also with the seasons, there's various different beers and drinks and everything else that comes out. So as a side bit to some of the podcasts, we would do a drink review where Alex and I would buy a bunch of drinks from the convenience store and kind of go over them with the listener and say, oh, this drink's good, this drink's not. In retrospect, it's kind of funny because these drinks are around so infrequently that by the time someone came to Japan and looked for that drink, they probably wouldn't be able to find it. So it's really just us sharing the experience more than anything else, but it was a lot of fun. This clip in particular is kind of funny for two reasons. One, because obviously we're already getting a little bit inebriated and you can kind of hear it in our voices. But the other thing, too, is some really cool music in the background. Our neighborhood was beginning to have their Matsuri, and they were either in the midst of it or practicing. I don't quite remember. But definitely check this one out, too, episode 41. And this is the drink review where Alex and I discuss the finer points of Nika whiskey and attempt to do math. So we arrived in the convenience store today, and I see this Nika Black Clear Blend in a standard soda can, and it says something 10, I can't read it, there's too much kanji there.
Well, the first two characters, and I think it's Tenjan.
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 And
Mizu Wari.
Mizu wari. Yeah. So it mixed with water.
Or Tenzen Mizu wari. I'm not sure what the second one is. But it means natural.
So I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be some sort of like soda drink with a little bit of whiskey, like a whiskey and like a whiskey and club soda or something like that. No. This is Nikko whiskey, and, you know, Nikko whiskey's nothing to write home about, but it's decent.
Right.
Well, this is quite terrible, actually, because they've watered it down an incredible amount.
It is, yeah. I have to admit, it's incredibly watered down.
And I think Nikko, on average, I don't know what the proof is, and I'm looking for how much alcohol, but this only has 9%.
That's quite low. I still have a flask of Nikko, actually, in the kitchen.
Okay.
I can go grab it.
Check that out. It's kind of cool that we have this background music. Beth, you opened this.
Yeah, it's coming in pretty clear.
I just opened the window a little bit.
But I don't think they're actually doing the festival.
Nah.
It's probably just rehearsal, maybe? Yeah, regular Nikko has 37% alcohol.
37% So they had to dilute it 4 times. So it's one part water, or one part Nikko,
yeah,
and 4 parts. Well, because it, well, if they added half the amount of water, if they added just like water, I'm going to start doing math on this thing. If they added water and Nikko in equal amounts,
right, it'd be like 18%.
It'd be 18%.
Roughly.
If they did twice as much water as Nikko, then it would be a third.
Right.
So there's 3 parts water.
Right, one part.
One part Nikko.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a ratio of 3 to 1 water. So take like a little, you know, cup and fill it up a quarter, and then pour water in the rest, and that's what I'm drinking right now. It's quite bad.
Yeah.
So.
It was really good.
Man, that's pretty funny. I really like the music in the background, though. I think later that evening we went out, kind of walked around, checked it out. You know, one of the things that's disappointing is that throughout the production of this podcast, I was keeping some notes and doing some behind the scenes kind of work, which it's kind of weird because the podcast itself is pretty intimate, so there's no real behind the scenes. Like, the podcast itself is sort of a behind the scenes of, you know, my life, or at least my life during that period. But I did have some good video footage. Unfortunately, my external hard drive crashed earlier this year, and I lost all of that extra footage and all that extra sound, so. But I do have these bits and pieces, and, you know, listening back to this episode certainly helps me remember some of the memories. So that's some information about the food and drink in Japan. Also, there was a lot of pictures on my Flickr account where I actually created a set just for food and talked about some of the different food items I had run across. So you can check that out, too, on the site while it's still there. What do you mean, while it's still there? Well, I'll talk about that in a little bit, but let's sort of take a quick break, and then we'll complete part one here, and I will move on to part two of the final episode of Finding Japan. Welcome back. Do you feel well rested? I hope so. This is going to be a long episode. I'm sorry, guys. You may have to break it up. I thought about actually breaking it up into multiple actual physical recordings, but then I'm like, you know, 64 is a nice number. I really like that number. I had hoped that I'd get to 100 at some point, but that never happened. But 64 is a good number, you know, 8 by 8, nice and even, round. I don't know. I like that number, 64, so we're going to leave it at 64. But do you know that Finding Japan is actually more than 64 episodes. Finding Japan started before I even arrived in Japan, and it actually started in 2005 when Fred and I came to Japan and had a set of experiences. That's where I met Saya for the first time. We met up with Terrence down in Kobe, and we had some great experiences, including staying in Koyasan, which I think is southeast of Osaka, maybe about 2 hours by various modes of transportation. But yeah, our experiences in Japan before I even arrived here for the podcast are documented and are part of the Finding Japan legacy. So if you haven't checked that out and if you've listened for a while, go back. There's some pretty cool stuff. I think maybe the first 8 episodes are video, and there might be one audio podcast, I'm not sure. And then there were also maybe 2 or 3, what I'll call prologue episodes to Finding Japan as well, where I talked a little bit about what was going on in my MBA program and what I was expecting before leaving. And those are really cool because in a lot of ways, it's very interesting to see where my head was at before I came to Japan. And that's where I want to turn to next. So what I'm going to play for you now is one of the clips from one of those prologue episodes. And this goes all the way back to October of 2006. So this is over 2 years ago. So let's take a listen to that episode going all the way back to late 2006. I am currently in business school, which has been a recent development. I think at this point, I've been in business school since the end of July, and we've already completed 9 classes, so it's pretty amazing. And I apologize if there's some road noise here. You guys are actually sitting in my visor right now as I'm driving to this person's house. But basically, I am in my late 20s, and I am interested in other cultures, specifically Japan, and really Finding Japan is a little less about, obviously, Finding Japan, because we all know where it is on a map, and more about finding myself in Japan, and basically growing as a person, culturally, knowledge-wise, and just, you know, being a little more generally aware of what it's like to be a human being. And that is essentially the goal at this point. I apologize if I'm stuttering too here. I'm trying to drive and talk at the same time, so this may not turn out to be actually usable. I've also been quite inspired by some podcasters. What's funny is I don't even remember what I recorded that with. I'm trying to think, what the hell did I put in my visor? So in another brief episode here, another nugget from the prologues, is 25 days before I left for Japan, I recorded another episode. So let's kind of look back on that really quick. We'll set up the next bit here where we talk about experiences in Japan. That it would be about time to get back in the podcasting habit, seeing as there are only 25 days left until I leave for Japan, which was the, leaving for Japan was the primary reason for starting this podcast, so that people who are interested in possibly moving there or would just like to get to know a little more about what it's like for a person who's not familiar with Japan to live there for an extended period of time, hopefully I can share some of those experiences with those who are interested. And if you're not and you're just listening anyway, I'm not really sure why you're listening, but it's okay. Thanks. Okay. Yeah, and you know, looking back on that, I really hope that I was able to do that with Finding Japan. You know, I became familiar with Japan. I found Japan. I guess that's sort of the running joke with the name of the podcast, right? Did you ever find Japan? You know, you were there for 18 months. Yes, I did. But more importantly than finding Japan or learning about Japan is finding myself. And that was one of the main reasons why I went to Japan, is really to learn about myself and to expand myself as a person. And there was a lot of experiences, humbling, exciting, confusing, weird, strange, funny, all sorts of things that happened while I was in Japan. And that's what this next section is about, really, is exploring and learning and getting around and sort of the experiences of in Japan. And I really can't claim to try and sum up all of those experiences in a short podcast episode where I summarize the entire podcast. I'm not trying to do that. If you're interested in Japan, I would really recommend going through and listening to the whole podcast. And I'll talk a little bit more about where you'll be able to get it forever a little later. But, you know, there are some things that are worth pointing out. One experience that I thought was really cool, in retrospect but not at the time, was getting a cold and dealing with sort of the medical system of Japan. There were a few episodes about that because I did have some minor medical problems, you know, colds, etc., while I was there. So I got to experience that. But there was this great experience with having a cold and working with my local pharmacist. And I recount the story, I think, in episode 16, where I talk about this entire experience of dealing with my local pharmacist. And it's quite hilarious because I think I was still had a cold at the time, so I was kind of still fed up with it, but was able to look back on it and make fun of myself. So check this out. This is from episode 16 called Getting a Cold.
So one morning I woke up, I think it was a Sunday morning actually, and decided that I was feeling pretty horrible enough to try and go get some medicine. Now, Sunday wasn't a holiday, I believe, so most of these stores were open. A few times I had gone back and forth through the neighborhood, and I had gone by a place that looked like it was one of those medicine stores. So I hopped on my bike on Sunday, and I went over to that place, and there was an elderly gentleman. I'd have to say he was in his mid to late 70s, possibly early 80s. It's difficult to tell with Japanese people sometimes. And he was very nice, and I explained to him in my limited Japanese that I had a cold, and my throat was sore. My throat hurt, and my ears and nose and throat felt like they were full. He said a bunch of stuff. I probably understood a good third of it, and eventually he handed me these pills, and the pills were 1,650 yen, which ends up being approximately $13, I would say. So I looked in my wallet, and I only had 1,000 yen, so I apologized to him profusely, and I said, okay, I'll be right back. I will return. I will go home and get money and come back. So I went home, and the only thing I had was a 10,000 yen bill, which is about $80. So it would roughly equivalent to the U.S. 100, but then with the conversion rate, it ends up being somewhere around $80, I think. I bring the money back, and he kind of looks at me, and he says, you know, kono satsu wa dame, which is basically like, you know, that bill is bad, I can't take it. I knew what he meant. He wasn't saying that my money was no good. It's just he couldn't break a bill that large for a single purchase. So at this point, I am like sweating. I'm hot and cold at the same time. I don't know how that's possible, but it was happening. I was feeling pretty bad, and I'm like, okay, all right. So let's go to the convenience store and buy some of these huge bottles of amino acid resupply. The closest equivalent I can think of in U.S. terms would be something like Gatorade, except it's clear, it's made by Kirin Beverage, and it's called like Amino Supply. So I went to the grocery store that was maybe about a 5-minute bike ride down the road, and I picked up a few of those. I had been to that grocery store plenty of times, and they know me, so they were okay with me giving them 100. So I bought maybe 300 yen worth of drinks with essentially 10,000 yen bills. So I apologized to them, and then I rode back to the pharmacy store again and explained to them. Now this time the man's wife
was in there with her. And as soon as I walked in, they both started apologizing profusely. I think they could see that I was, like, sweating. I wasn't feeling good. And I have a feeling, you know, I sort of ran the backstory in the back of my mind later on that evening. And I have a feeling that the woman came down because she heard a foreigner talking. And by the time she came down, I was gone. And then the guy explained to her that I had 100. And she probably yelled at him because I was in pain. And he should have just taken the bill anyway. That's the, in my imagination, that was pretty much how it went out. But I don't really know how it worked. So I got back to the store the third time, and they were both there. And the woman was so nice, and he brought the pills over, and I paid for them with 2,000 yen bills. And they wanted to sit there and talk to me, and I was like, oh, God, here we go. Now, they didn't know English, but I think they were just curious to speak to a foreigner. And I'm really curious to speak to Japanese people, too. In fact, sometimes I'll know the way to go to get somewhere, but I will stop and ask somebody for directions just because I want to practice my Japanese. I know what it means to be extroverted, to, you know, especially in this environment, to want to talk to people. And I think Japanese people generally feel the same way about foreigners. They're a bit hesitant, but at the same time, they're curious. So the woman started asking me, you know, do I live in Sumida? And I told her where I lived. And then she started asking me, well, why are you here? And I told her I was studying Japanese. And at this point, I really felt like I was just going to pass out. So I sort of steadied myself against the wall. And she kept speaking to me. And eventually, you know, I was understanding less and less and less. And I realized it wasn't because of my language skill, but it was more because of just my physical state. I could not focus on what this woman was saying. And I felt awful about it. So eventually I just said, you know, I stopped her and I said, excuse me, I have a cold. I feel really bad. I'm going to go home now. Thank you very much. And I think she kind of got it and they let me go and I returned home.
It wasn't all that bad, but it definitely was kind of funny looking back on that. Another great set of experiences I had there, which I talked about a little before, is just exploring Japan. In episode 17, I just took a walk through Asakusa, and there's this great bit in there where I'm walking from store to store, and I'm just sort of naming off and rattling the stores that I'm seeing, and sort of laying out some coffee shops, too, in prep for the coffee episode. But it's kind of neat to just sort of remember those stores, and that there's this really great shopping street. I think it's called Nakamise Dori, across the street. It starts towards the riverside of Asakusa, and you can walk pretty much all the way through Asakusa down to the department stores in this covered mall area. And it goes perpendicular to the road of shops that leads to Meiji Jingu. So really easy to find if you're in the area. But this is me walking through that area and sort of checking out some of the stores that I had seen. So let's take a quick listen to that.
It looks like very cheap coffee, and they have pancakes. Man, I should have just came up here. Here's another one. There's a coffee. Oh my God, this place is full of places that have pancakes and coffee. I totally went to the wrong place today. Hold on, let me take a picture of this one, too. Man, if this keeps up, this is going to be kind of crazy. I'm thinking, I'm actually sort of having a flashback, too, thinking back to my time with Fred here. I think one of the first nights we arrived, we actually went up to Asakusa to go eat dinner at this place. And I think this is the area we were in because we just walked by, we just walked by a store that had a bunch of alcohol in it, and it looks really familiar. I think that's where I bought my bottle of the Honshu that I had bought when I was there before. But anyway, to get back to these coffee shops, yeah, there's a ton. And I guess the lesson is just explore more, and you end up finding things that you hadn't seen before.
Another fun part of learning to live in Japan was learning to deal with the commuting. Like I said, I didn't have a car in Japan, and I had a bicycle for a short period of time, which I talk about in episode 30 called, well, I don't know if that's the name of the episode, but the episode's about getting my bike stolen. It's a really good episode. I recommend checking it out. So good, I'm not going to put a clip. One of the things that I remembered from Japan is the PASMO pass card system that had come out when I had just gotten there, or just shortly before I got there. It was a new system. And they were running this commercial that I remember, and I had it stuck in my head for, God, a year. And I totally forgot about it until I started doing research for this show. So now I'm going to throw it back in there and have you guys have this thing stuck in your head. But I think I may have also posted a link to the commercial. But here we go. This is from episode 19, the Commute Cast, where Alex and I talk about getting around in Japan and how to do it and how the transportation system works. And here's the clip of the PASMO commercial.
Now, I think Tokyo Metro has the PASMO.
Mm-hmm, right.
Which, I can never get that freaking song out of my head. I'm going to find it, and I'm going to insert it right here. Okay. So now you'll have it stuck in your head. Ha! Maybe I'll get it out of my head. No, it's a really cute commercial.
So there were quite a few other great experiences that I had in this podcast, and we'll talk a little bit about those. Episode 36 is where I recall climbing Mount Fuji. Definitely a good episode for someone who is interested in climbing Mount Fuji. I talk a little bit about what we had to do, what it was like, and what I would have done differently, I think. Also, in episode 38, I talk about heading to Miyajima and playing with deer, which is an activity that we did during our summer vacation in Japan, where Linda came out and we toured Japan for about 2 weeks doing various things. There's a lot of other great content, I think, in the podcast for someone interested in Japan, and also a lot of other what I would call reflective content, where I learned a lot about myself. One episode that comes to mind is where I discuss the allegory of the overcoat. I'm not going to put a clip of that on there or bore you with it, but I really think that documenting this experience in Japan allowed me to really reflect on myself and my own personal growth. So there's sort of the Zen moment of the wrap-up podcast. But I think I learned a lot, and I'm glad I was able to share it with people who are interested and sort of reflect on it now. The other thing probably to note about the podcast, if you haven't listened to it before and this is your first episode, welcome, now that we're over an hour into the podcast. But there were a lot of video episodes, and I recommend going to check those out as well. They will be part of the Finding Japan archive. Episode 5, we took a tour of Meiji Jingu, and that was a lot of fun. I think it was my second or third time there, the main shrine in Tokyo. Episode 8 was the Hanami episode, where I met up with some friends, including Terrence from Finding from Finding Japan. No, Terrence from Kobe Beef Show, and we got incredibly saucy that night and had a lot of fun, but you can see some of the video from before that. Let's see, we did some cooking with Alex where we tried to make hot dog faces. There's episode 14 where we rode the Tokyo monorail, rode my bike to Otemachi one day, and did a video podcast of that. There's some slideshow video from the Asakusa Tanabata Festival. The Yakiimo truck, which we talked about before, I actually got that guy on film. There's this got some of the boats that go up and down the Sumida River. Obviously, the deer of Miyajima. There's a Tokyo Game Show episode, if you guys are interested in that, episode 47. And episode 54, where we went to the Osaka Aquarium, among other episodes. There's some other stuff there, too. But go check it out if you're into video. There were some things there, so probably about a dozen or so video episodes that we were able to do. Okay, where do we go from here? Well, let's wrap it up, I think. Some final thoughts. I'm glad I had a chance to do this final episode. I'm sorry it took so long to do, but hopefully it sort of caps off the Finding Japan experience. I do have some audio I want to share with y'all. You all, and that's living in South Carolina for you. Y'all so much more efficient, don't you think? It's kind of like Japanese, where they shorten words and completely change the meaning of the word often, but y'all is a nice shortcut, so let's stick with that. I hope it was enjoyable for everybody else. This exercise was kind of like a yearbook, looking back, and it was a lot of fun. Looking back on these episodes, I realized I had a lot of fun doing the episodes, and I also realized that I wish I could do this in more phases of my life, because I had mentioned before that my hard drive crashed, and I was really bummed out because there was a lot of stuff, a lot of audio and a lot of video that I wish I could have saved. But as I started doing the research for this final episode, I realized, man, there's a lot of good stuff here. You know, when you go on vacation, you bring your camera and you're like, oh, I'm going to take all these pictures. I'm going to do all this great stuff and put it together when I get home. And then you come home and you have like four pictures and a video of like, you know, the waiter getting the food or something incredibly uninteresting. Well, this podcast actually forced me to create interesting content. And looking back on it, or at least I hope it was interesting, looking back on it now, I'm thinking, wow, you know, I'm glad I did this because I will have this and I'll be able to keep it and show it to my kids or bore my grandkids with it someday. So I'm glad I did that. And it makes me really wonder if I should do that with more phases of my life. I don't think my daily life now is as interesting as it was in Japan, at least to other people. So I don't really think I will do a life podcast kind of deal or human interest story podcast moving forward. Just because I don't think life in the United States would be all that interesting. Our culture is pretty much spread out all over the world, so people kind of know what it's like to live here already, I think. But whereas living in Japan really is a different perspective, and for some reason interesting to others, including myself, as I still listen to many of my friends and colleagues in Japan and the content that they keep producing. So I don't know, I guess that's my final thoughts. Another final thought is I think I found Japan, but more importantly, I think I found myself and learned a lot about myself. I would encourage anyone who is thinking about living or working abroad to go ahead and do it. If you have reservations, just know that it can be a great growing experience and a very humbling experience in terms of learning things about yourself. So I would highly recommend doing it to anybody. If you're a college student or even a high school student, you have the opportunity to study abroad, do it. That's one of the things I completely regret not doing when I was in high school and college. So take advantage of that. And if for whatever reason you wish you could have gone to Japan but didn't, well, hopefully this podcast has helped you live vicariously through my experiences, which is one of the points of this podcast. So there you go. Let's see. Some special notes here. I asked for some thoughts from some of the listeners, and I got some responses, so I'm going to play those next. And hopefully I know these people have enjoyed listening to the podcast, but I want to say more than that, I've enjoyed their friendship both remotely and for those that I've gotten to know through the podcast and had the opportunity to meet. The first sort of goodbye or farewell will be from Aaron. So here we go.
Hey, Christopher, it's Aaron from Hamamatsu, leaving you an audio message about my favorite parts of Finding Japan and what those could be. Well, there are a lot of them, and I think mostly it has to do with your hospitality. And by hospitality, I mean not just in the physical sense, in that I have met you and, you know, gotten to know you better in a personal sense, but also that your hospitality in terms of putting out your personal experiences in an open and honest and authentic way to anyone who would want to hear them. And hospitable thing to do, I guess. Because not only has it helped with my own experiences in Japan, because as you know, I've been here as well for a little bit less of the time than that you've been here. I arrived a few months after you did. But it's really helped me understand a lot of aspects, be able to expect a lot more, or go into social situations expecting more, or being more informed about getting more out of all of my social situations here. And that might sound a bit maybe grandiose or far-fetched, but I don't mean it to be. I really do feel as though it's, you know, this is almost the equivalent of the Lonely Planet travel guide or any sort of hostel guide to traveler's guide to Japan. This is really from start to finish, I think even in your earlier episodes, very much an adequate representation of how it is to live here. And I don't know, I think it's been a really, really interesting and entertaining and informative and process in total. And I'm sorry if I'm gushing a little bit, but I'm really going to be sad to see it end. And maybe that's also because my time here is ending as well. So again, maybe it's a bit too you know, I don't mean to gush so much, but nonetheless, there you have it. I appreciate your project, and I think I'll look back on it and remember my own experiences, and I don't know. I just think that it's been a special thing, and I can't wait to hear more from you, and I'm just really glad that you decided to put it all out there for all of us, really. And I think that everyone would agree that that's been really helpful in many, many ways. So, sorry to see it go. Sorry to see you go, but hopefully I could see you in Tokyo before you leave, and maybe even North America when you get back there and I get back there. So, for now, take care, and we'll talk to you soon, okay? Bye-bye.
Thanks, Aaron. That was really nice. Actually, I didn't even listen to that until I was going to do the production for this episode. So thank you very much. For those of you who don't know, Aaron was a great individual living in Hamamatsu for a while. And he also had a podcast called Letters to Nana that was excellent. So I recommend you go check that out if it's still up. But Linda and I had the opportunity to meet Aaron, and he's just a great individual and a very thoughtful man. So, you know, this is not very surprising to me because we've met quite a few great people here in Japan, or there in Japan. I say it like I'm still there, but I'm not. But we met quite a few great people, and Aaron certainly one of those great people. And I hope that I did that, and I hope that I'm glad that you got that out of the podcast, and I hope that other people do as well. And you know, it was really great meeting you, and Linda and I really enjoyed your company when you came up to Asakusa and had dinner with us and walked around for a while. And that was really nice. And hopefully we'll get to see each other again if we get up to the Pacific Northwest area, up above there, a little further over there in Canada. So hope you're doing well, and thanks for your comments, and hope to catch up with you really soon. And by the way, Aaron is a mean chess player. He just beat me the other day on Facebook, so We, at least we have chess to keep in touch, and I'm looking forward to a rematch. Okay, let's see, some special notes. Where is Finding Japan going to physically go? I'm going to move all of the files over to archive.org. Archive.org is a great place to store archival content. It has a ton of media. Usually, I think it's mostly open source or out of copyright material. I've put many of my projects up there, but go ahead and go to www.archive.org and search for Finding Japan, and you will be able to find all of the episodes for this podcast, including all of the prologues and video episodes as well. So go there and check it out. The findingjapan.com site may be retired at a later date. I will leave it as is for now, but I will put a splash page at some point in the future that'll repoint to the archive.org material and try to find a way to keep the podcast feed up so that people can continue to subscribe to it through iTunes and through the podcast feed link. I'm not quite sure if I'll keep the actual domain name. I may do that, but we'll see. I'm not exactly sure when it expires. Let's see. People that I'd like to thank. There's many, many people. I'd like to thank all the people that I worked with, including Mizuno-san, Matsuda-san, Ishikawa-san, Hino-san, Suzuki-san, Sakamoto-san, and many others that continue to listen to the podcast. Also want to thank Saya, who welcomed me to Japan on my first trip, and her friend Rinko as well, who gave me a place to stay when I first got to Japan. Thank you very much. Without your kind hospitality, I think my initial impressions of Japan would have been very different. So because of you, the spirit of this podcast, that was a large part to your hospitality. And like Aaron said, I think I learned that from my friends Saya and Rinko. And thank you again for extending your friendship to me and continuing to be a very good friend to myself and others. So thank you very much. I also like to thank all the people that I met at the Tachinomi in Kamata, including Kon-chan, Mat-chan, the master there, Shoko, Mei-chan, everybody else from Kamata. Had a great time with everybody there. I miss you all very much. And hopefully we'll be able to get in touch the next time I come down to Tokyo. Let's see. I'd also like to thank Terrence Young from Kobe Beef Show Podcast. Terrence has been an awesome friend. He's come up to our place to crash a couple times. He's come out to Tokyo to visit friends, and every time he's come up, he's given me a ring. Gone down to visit him a few times with Alex and with Linda and with Fred and everybody. So it's just, Terrence is just an awesome guy. I mean, hanging out down there in Kobe, but man, he's got a heart of gold, and another one of those rare people who just welcomes everybody. And had a lot of great times with Terrence, and I look forward to quite a few more. So Terrence, thanks a lot, man. A lot of the stuff in this podcast goes out to you, of course. You were a big part of that, so thanks. I'd also like to thank Scott Lockman. He's been sort of the intellectual mentor for me in terms of thinking about podcasting and formats and all that, and also the godfather of podcasting there in Japan. So, Scott, thank you very much for your input, your ear, your conversations. It's always been a pleasure to speak with you, and look forward to many more of your projects moving forward and perhaps some collaborations in the future. So we'll be in touch about that. Thanks for everything again. Also like to thank Rich Pav. Though I didn't get a chance to meet him directly while I was out there, do appreciate his podcast, and it's been a big influence on this podcast as well. So thanks, Rich. Keep at it, and look forward to what's to come with your podcast and your blogging efforts there in Japan. I'd like to thank Melissa Chase, who ran a great blog about Japan. for a while and take some amazing photographs of Japan, specifically of geisha in Kyoto. So I don't know if she still listens to the podcast, but your photos have been an inspiration, so I appreciate them greatly. And I know she's I think she's back in D.C. now, so she's no longer in Japan, but she spent quite a while, I believe, in the JET program and has some beautiful photographs, a really accomplished photographer. I think she actually had some stuff published through National Geographic, if I'm not mistaken. But definitely look her up as well. Her blog is M Boogie Down Japan. M Boogie Down, MBOOGIEDOWN-Japan.blogspot.com. So definitely check that out. Also want to thank Aaron again. I've enjoyed becoming his friend and finally meeting him. And it was great to bounce some of my experiences in Japan off of Aaron. And it seems like we've had many of the same experiences. So that's always fun to know. And from the looks of Aaron's pictures, too, I believe he made some great friends in Japan. And I'm sure he's a great friend to many people as well. Let's see. I also like to thank Fred and Alex, who helped contribute to the podcast. They've been friends before the podcast, obviously, and will continue to be friends. I'd also like to thank my wife, Linda, for being patient with the time that it takes to put this together and watching me talking to a microphone by myself. Though she never actually really listened to the podcast, I do believe that she enjoyed some of the experiences and the people that we're able to meet through the podcast. So thanks, Linda. Okay, I think that's going to wrap it up. Geez, I don't know what else to say. I think we should just cut it off. There's one more thing. People were asking what I'm going to do moving forward. I'm still working on the project. I'm doing some pre-production with a friend of mine now on the latest project. It is not Japan-related, and it is not culture-related. It's completely different, and I don't want to use Finding Japan as a soundboard for that new project. So I will say this, if you are interested in learning what that project is, please shoot me off an email, christopher@findingjapan.com, and I will put you on a list for any new projects that come out. And then that way I don't have to subject you to anything not Japan-related if you're not interested. So that's going to do it. 64 episodes, plus or minus, some additional ones. I had a great time in Japan, learned an awful lot, and I thank you for listening to this podcast and all these recordings, and I hope that they encourage more people to find their own Japan sometime in the future. Thanks, and I'll talk to you all later.